Seed funding for Limestone City Cooperative Housing Incorporated, approved by City Council. The City of Kingston, through recommendations approved by Council on June 20th, has made up to $50,000 of seed funding available for the Limestone City Cooperative Housing Project. According to Councillor Jeff McLaren, the City's Council appointee to LCCH's Board of Directors, this funding will allow them to take the project to the next level. In order to apply to larger grants, the organization requires high-level documentation from professionals, such as architects, to determine the amount of funding required. However, without the money to hire those professionals at the beginning, the organization was unable to apply for substantial funding. However, with this seed funding, Limestone City Cooperative Housing will be able to retain an architect and professionals needed to obtain the reports to move the project forward. The goals LCCH is working towards include a building with up to 300 mixed-income units. I sat down with Councillor Jeff McLaren to talk about this project and how the funding will help move it forward. We discussed several ways in which the building will promote community, wellness, and mental health through features of the structure itself and the encouragement of community-fostering activities amongst residents and other community members. Councillor McLaren also discusses integrating several green features into the building. Without further delay, here's what Councillor Jeff McLaren has to say about the project. To start us off, would you like to introduce yourself and maybe give a bit of background on Limestone City Cooperative Housing?
Certainly. So I'm Jeff McLaren. I am the chair of the board of the Limestone City Cooperative Housing and the City Council representative on the board. And the background on the issue is that we've had a housing crisis now forever. And since I've been on the board, we've been pushing for co-ops. Before I got on council, I've been pushing for co-ops. Rob Hutchison, who's kind of my mentor, who was my mentor on council for the first two terms, he's been pushing for co-ops for even longer than I have. And this is the first council that was very interested in pursuing this as one of the tools that we have to increase the housing supply, as well as find some lower priced housing as opposed to market housing. And that's where it came through. So finally, we've got a group of people that are willing to support us.
Awesome. Thank you for the background on that. And could you remind us again how much funding was approved this week?
So $50,000, up to $50,000 to get the very basics from professionals. So as we were looking over the grants while we were waiting for our incorporation to come through, we saw that they won't take my word for it. I'm not a professional. So we need to have an architect give us high level plans of how much it's going to cost, how many units are going to be there, and how many afford, like rent geared to income housing we can afford given the other two parameters. So once we have a professional that gives us those answers, that's what the $50,000 is for. We can apply for the really large grants, the ones that will allow us to actually build, like break ground and build something.
Absolutely. And you sort of got into it there, but just to dig a little deeper there, prior to receiving this funding, you guys were in a situation that you described as a catch-22 because you needed professionals to secure the larger grants, but you didn't have the funds to hire a professional. So could you describe sort of where you were at prior to the approval of this funding?
So we were getting excited. We were finding lists of possible funding opportunities, and there's small ones which we can get, and it takes time and all that. And those will cover any difference that this $50,000 doesn't. So after talking to the city about this, like if we were to go this the slow way, it could be another year before we would have even enough funds to start. So in order, because it's a bit of a crisis, the city agreed that we should speed this up as much as possible. So that's what the seed funding is for. To put it in another metaphor, we were given the seeds to be able to build this instead of having to go out and buy the seeds to build this.
Absolutely, yeah. And hiring an architect is one of your main goals and other experts. Of course, it's clear why an architect is generally needed for this project, but what are some of the ways that this hire would advance the project's goals, and what else can these funds be used for?
So that's the main an architect will be the main professional. We're also interested in vertical farming and having major green components throughout this. So we want a green wall that public can access, and we can grow, say, strawberries or blueberries or basil or things like that. We also want greenhouses on the roof. That'll be one of the last parts that we put in, because we've identified retrofit grants that will work for that. So we have to build first and then put the greenhouses on. And since it's a community run thing, like a co-op means that everybody contributes some volunteer time a month, I'm thinking maybe 4 hours a month, that they will help create food security for people in Kingston as well as themselves. Because I, based on the amount of space we have and the preliminary talks we've had with vertical farming experts, we're going to be producing more than we need. And so there's a food bank just down the road, which will be one source of where we can produce extra. The So we know we're going to need a vertical farming expert to make sure, like, for example, HVAC systems in the vertical farming space are done properly, and how much space and room is going to be needed and what we can put in the space there. So they're going to have to work closely with the architect. The architect will also tell us if there's going to be need for other professionals. So there's been some talk about the possibility of a hydrological study, because there is a stream that goes through the property and there's a big rock sort of up underground. Those kind of things, the architect can give us a sense of that as well.
Great. I know your long-term goals include erecting a building with up to 300 mixed income units, but would you like to get more into that long-term goal and describe a bit about what your plan looked like for this project so far?
Certainly. So the idea is that when we build a thing, we're going to know how much it's going to cost to build it. The architect will like itemize pretty much everything that goes into the building. And with everything that comes itemized, there'll be a life cycle for it. So we're hoping just for the sake of easy calculations that the building is going to last 100 years and various parts of it will, like say faucets, have to be replaced every 10 or 20 or 30 years. Once we figure out all of that, we can figure out the sustaining cost of the building in perpetuity. So if, say, the total cost is, say, just for simple reasons, $100,000 over 100 years, and then you amortize that over that 100 years, that's the sustaining cost of the building. Mm-hmm. We suspect that number is significantly below the market rate right now. Those who can pay above the sustainable rate and something, say, close to the market rate, will subsidize those who cannot meet the minimum sustainable rate. And so... and we suspect that everybody will be below the market rate. So there's a cost of running the building in perpetuity. So we're not talking about like, what is the cost for, say, to run it this month or this year? We're talking about the cost of replacing the entire building at the end of its life cycle. Mm-hmm. Whatever that cost is, people who pay above that because they can afford to, say that's 30% of their income is above that, will help. That surplus there will be used to offset the cost from people who cannot meet that because of their income being 30% of their income being somewhat lower than that sustainable cost. The idea is that if we can identify the costs over the lifetime of the building, we can have a much more secure idea of what it's going to run on each month for the next 100 years.
Mm, absolutely. And as for the actual building of the building, would you like to discuss some of the plans that you have so far? Right now, you're of course still in the process of hiring architects and imagining what it'll look like and where it'll be, but if you'd like to give some details on that, that'd be awesome.
So one of the things that I've been reading a lot on architecture, and one of the things is biophilic design that takes into account our human evolutionary history. So as an example, people throughout history seem to have wanted to climb a high area, look around, like where they're living, a high area, look around, and then reference that whenever they are around the area. Church steeples have done that in medieval times and throughout history as well, and minarets in other cultures. So part of what helps people feel at home, feel comfortable, is if they can get onto the roof, look around, and then see the roof from wherever it is on the street. So one of the things I'm hoping that the architect will be able to let us afford is to put, say, a gazebo on a functional roof on top of the elevator shaft, which is usually the thing that sticks up above all the other buildings in around here. If you ever see, they have a pretty flat roof and then they have a little thing that sticks up. That's where the elevator shaft is. It just needs to be higher than the rest of the building. So if we can do that, we can support that notion that brings sort of a comfort, a feeling of refuge and a feeling of home to people who live there and as they're going there and as they look around. Another thing that was mentioned is running water is an extremely calming and affirming kind of thing for people. If you don't hear the running water on a regular basis, it leads to more anxiety. So if we can have in the courtyard a small fountain with a very, very shallow pool, because apparently water splashing on water is more relaxing and more interesting for people than splashing on rocks, but water is better in either case. So little things like that I've been reading about are things that we want to present to the architect and say, this is kind of what we want in the building. Additional to that is the agricultural aspect. So greenhouses on the roof, vertical farming and a green wall. Having also read a little bit of Jane Jacobs, she talks about the ballet of the street and how to integrate the street life along like the pedestrian, like the sidewalks with the building. And there, she's got a few suggestions for that, which we're also gonna take to the architect. So the hope is that the building will be incredibly comfortable for people. They'll feel like it's home because of all the cues and all the things that are built into the building that are designed to calm people based on our evolutionary biology.
That's awesome that you guys are taking into account these more psychological impacts of the building. You got into it there, but could you do a little deep dive on some of the green features that you guys are looking to incorporate here?
Yes. So we've been looking at several companies that provide vertical farming. And one of the things that we definitely do not want is a monocrop, because people get very tired of, say, lettuce. It's very easy to make lettuce, but what we're hoping to do is have a variety of fruits and vegetables within that. And that's part of our goal. So we don't want everybody to have lettuce every day of the year. We would like a variety of that. And we're also looking for a labor intensive vertical farm, because part of the benefit of a co-op is that we have volunteer hours that everybody has to come up with. So just a basic calculation, if we do get 300 and there's an average of two adults per unit, that gives us about 80 volunteer hours per day, and to work on the farm or various other things. And that strikes me as, well, it's going to be a labor intensive farm, so we can have at least 80 hours of work on it every day. And if we can do that, that's a lot of produce that we can grow. So we are looking to have fruit, vegetables. So one of the things that everybody seems to love is strawberries, blueberries. And if you can pick them, it's so much the better. That also can be grown on the green wall. So one of the things that in order to maintain, to avoid overlook. So adjacent to the property are houses that are between 1.5 stories and 2.5 stories. The law in Kingston is that you can't have overlooks. You can't have something that's like 3 stories that can look over into your neighbor's yard and then through their windows. But if we put the vertical farm along those edges of the wall, we have just a blank wall. That's allowed, but it's kind of boring. So one of the things we're thinking is, what can we use with that space? And that's where a vertical wall comes in. So you can grow stuff that like vines that can grow up. So strawberries apparently can be grown very well on that. Blueberries, basil are the top three that we've seen. So we can actually have community access to blueberry picking and strawberry picking seasons along that wall. And then the other time, it's not dense concrete. It looks sort of like, it'll be green. It'll be something growing there, and it'll be sort of planty and moving in the, oh, that's another thing that I've been hearing. Apparently people love fractal patterns, and the kind of patterns that you see in plants. So if you see a lot of them and you see them sort of moving with the wind kind of stuff, that's a very, it's a psychologically very pleasing phenomenon for people.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, sorry. So that's two of them. So that's the green wall, the vertical farming. So part of the retrofits that we'll do is put greenhouses on the roof. So just the way that the sun goes on that, the part of the green wall or the green roof, or sorry, the greenhouses will not necessarily be as effective in growing things, but they can hold chickens. And chickens help make manure as well as provide eggs for the people. But that's further down the road. We're going to actually change the chicken bylaw in Kingston. And but it's we have an expert in farming who grew up on a farm, and she's been giving us a lot of, we can do this, we can do this. And so we're in a sense overwhelmed with all the options and the possibilities. But that one struck me as kind of interesting, that we can actually put eggs in, we can have, sorry, chickens in a greenhouse that help produce the manure and the soil for the vertical farm. As well as provide eggs for the community.
Once again, you sort of touched on this, both in your description of the psychologically beneficial aspects of the building as well as the gardens, but how will this help foster a community as well?
So, common cause. So what we're doing is we're trying to provide an additional ideal that people can add to their lives. So it is going to be a requirement of the co-op that you have to donate a certain amount of time. It doesn't mean that you have to work on a farm. There are other things, like there's definitely cleaning that can be done, but we're also going to have space for, entrepreneurial people who want to do something within the co-op. So such as yoga exercises or training or education, that kind of stuff. There will be spaces for that. The community, we're going to be trying to pick people who want this other ideal, this ideal of green self-producing food for themselves in a lower environment. This will be that. This will sort of help the flourishing of people, because cost of living will be down, food security will be up, and it'll be green in the sense that we're going to be producing our own food. So the carbon footprint of that will be much lower than going to any grocery store. So if people share that ideal, that brings them together in common cause, and there will be a regular benefit that they can see in their own pocketbooks and on their own dinner tables.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, this is a really cool project, and congratulations on securing that funding that you need to apply to additional grants and get some experts on board. What are the next few things on the docket for you? What are the next challenges you guys will be facing?
So right now, we've also been reading how to hire an architect. So we're going to be essentially sending out a request for proposals to as many architects as we can find, locally, of course. And then there's several that are specializing in vertical farming and building around vertical farming. So they may be further afield. So we're putting this all together. So those things I mentioned about the psychological benefits of having certain things, we're cataloging all of those that we can find, and just coming up with a vision. So it's important of getting that together. And we figure within the next 2, maybe 3 weeks at the latest, we'll have a proposal ready to send, or sorry, not a proposal, a request for a proposal document ready to send out to architects. And then we'll be essentially interviewing them.
Where can folks keep up with this project?
So the website is www.lcch.ca. We'll be putting everything we can on that as the news comes in.